I don't know what to say or where to start with your introduction, but thank you very much. And I think I feel really privileged to have this opportunity to be able to talk to the group here today and be part of your Lenten group talks. Before I start, thank you, Dr. Mamlat, for sharing that with us, because I think the perspective we get is what's on our doorstep and how to support people when they get here, but not always do we get to know a lot of the background. I think we read about it, we see it on telly. And as Romy said, sometimes really difficult for people to be able to share their stories. Sometimes they get there, but it's really, really a challenge. Just want to share something with you before I actually get into what the Red Cross does. Last weekend, I was at a circuit gathering in Reading. Both my husband and I are part of the Methodist circuit. And it was about looking to see what we, you know, as members of the church, or just generally anybody, looking to see who are pioneers. And I think we're all, in our own way, pioneers. It's about the talents you have, it's about the skills you have and how you use them to make a difference, to make an impact on people's lives. Working with people, enabling them, empowering them, supporting them to get to where they, you know, can stand on their own 2 feet if that's what they need, or facilitating for them to, you know, contribute to society and make a difference. And I think for me, I don't know what my strength is as a pioneer, but one thing I believe in is I've always been a people person, wanting to work with people, and my background is in community development, and that's how I came into the Red Cross. Victor and myself were originally from Sierra Leone. We've gone through our own bit of turmoil some time back, and having to support families, family members back there while we were here was really a difficult time. But now, I think we're in the position where we're able to, you know, do our own bit of pioneering and working and supporting people who need that little bit of support and help. So my role in the Red Cross, and I've been with the Red Cross for 10 years, but I've worked in this field now for about over 20 years. I started off with a small refugee community organization in Reading, was with them for about 10 years before moving on to the Red Cross, but I've carried on within almost the same role as a senior services manager. And the way the Red Cross is, can you hear me? The way the Red Cross is structured, we work in areas, and I'll show you, you know, the bit we cover. It's mainly the Thames Valley. We work in Milton Keynes, in Reading, Oxfordshire. We have a base in Abingdon, and with Buckinghamshire, trying to do some work in Highwycombe. And most of our work is based around where need is. I think there is need everywhere, but where there are gaps, we will step in and work in collaboration with others. So before I start, I just want to put some of this, some of the challenges, if you like, or our work with refugees in perspective, and I'll start with some numbers. The global displaced population, just under about 60 million. And a lot of these people, majority of them are internally displaced. And as you can see, where with the what we've just talked about, a lot of people are displaced, usually around where the problem is. It could be within the country, or even if they're able to flee, it's almost immediately, you know, the countries that border. So of this displaced population, about 19 million are refugees or recognized as refugees by the UNHCR. But for me, with all those figures, I think the one I find challenging is that more than 50% of that is accounts for children. That is a real challenge, and the sort of challenges we're having to deal with, you know, below 18 years of age. So in terms of where we are at in the UK and linking it to the global context, in some of these figures are from 2014, and we rely on the figures to come from the Home Office, and usually it's by the end of the first quarter of the following year. So we're still talking about 2014 numbers, but not much different. So there are about 126,000 refugees in the UK by the end of 2014, which is about, it's less than a percent of the UK population. That is now, that 19 now stands at about 0.24% of the population of 6.4 million in the UK. Last, in 2014, asylum applications were about 31,000. That has gone up slightly in the last year to, I believe, just under 50,000. And that is a reflection of the global context with, for example, in Syria, places like Afghanistan, people fleeing persecution in all these countries. But when we look at those numbers and what we're dealing with here in the UK, it's a lot less than what other countries are having to, the sort of numbers other countries are having to deal with. For example, in Germany, about 166,000. But we all know when the crisis actually came to, you know, our screens, those numbers have now really gone way, way up. I'll skip that because I think we probably have a sense of why people migrate. But these are some of the figures, and again, we had these figures at the end of last year, you know, about almost 600,000 people arriving in Europe. That number has gone way, way up. Greece supporting just under 500,000. Italy, 138,000. But when we look at, where is it? Can't see it. Is it? Oh. When we look at places like Turkey and what we saw with from Dr. Mamlet's there it is. So in Turkey, almost 3 million people they're supporting. And you have other places like in Jordan, all those camps surrounding Syria. They are having to deal with a lot more people who are displaced as a result of that, as a result of the war. So in terms of, before I go to that, just to give a bit of background and what it is we are looking to do here in the UK, I think you're probably aware. When, again, we saw that really terrible photograph on our screens, the government announced that they need to do something, made an announcement that they will seek to take about 20,000 refugees from the camps in Syria. But even before then, going back to 2014, that was a program that was already happening. Only it was on a very small scale. And I think when the reality, you know, became so global and so public, it felt like we could do more and we should be doing more. And I suppose with all the governments, they have to consider what resources they have and how they can use those resources. To see how they can contribute to this terrible tragedy that's unfolding right in front of our eyes. So the plan with the UK is that they will prioritise those that they will bring in, the families that they will bring in to support, and are looking to what they believe, or those people they believe are the most vulnerable in camps, So looking at women, girls, and children, survivors of violence, people with severe medical needs, you know, persons at risk of sexual exploitation, and so on. The list goes on. And I think for us, my experience already in the Thames Valley, and I think I'm in a, is it a fortunate position, but I have the opportunity to be able to work with local authorities right across Thames Valley. And the first families that arrived in Oxford, even though we're not supporting them directly, we have a sense of the challenges, you know, or the some of the issues that we're having to work with them through, you know, mental health issues, serious medical and health issues. And the way it's been set up, the government asked the local authorities to make an offer, you know, to see what resources they have in place and how many families they're going to be able to support. And my awareness across Thames Valley is that the numbers vary. For example, in Milton Keynes, we will be working with the local authority in Milton Keynes to support about 20 families over the lifetime of the program. And that would be about 4 families a year. Oxford looking to support about 20 families, and that's, I mean, about 10 families initially, and that's under review. And the list goes on. In Reading as well, we will be working with the local authority in Reading to support a number of families. But I think just to highlight the what the principles are behind resettlement is to ensure, you know, a durable solution in support of these people. And the approach as well that has been used allows for planning, because at the moment, the announcement was made in September, and we have been working with these local authorities, with within the voluntary sector, with civil society, and it operates differently. The approach is, even though the outcome is the same, it's about when we get these people in, how do we work with them, how do we support them to get them to a place where they become independent. You know, how quickly that happens depends on their situation when they get here and what support is in place for them. But it's about ensuring a durable solution. But also, I think there is also a responsibility and an opportunity for us to ask organizations, local authorities in the community to promote positive images, because there is a challenge of the media perception, what the media puts out there. And I think, in a way, they've lately, there has been some ownership of responsibility and trying to promote not necessarily positive images, but dealing with what the issues are, rather than the sort of myths we're having to deal with and work with, you know, with the community to get the communities to understand what the facts are. So in being able to support this program with the local authorities, we have to consider, you know, how we plan and coordinate locally. When the families arrive here, how do we work with them, but also to be able to manage their expectations to ensure they understand their rights and entitlements, but also what their responsibilities are. And that goes with all the refugee programs we've been working with, I've been working on, and I out there over the years. Also, for local authorities to be able to participate in this, we all, I think, we're aware of what the housing situation is, particularly in the south of England. And for them to be able to participate in this program, there has to be the provision of housing and ensuring that the tenancies can be sustained. I'll say a little bit more about that. Being able to access ESOL classes, providing opportunities for them to eventually engage whether it's through volunteering, but to get to the point where they become self-sustaining. Something else that has to be considered is that even though they'll be coming in, you know, their nuclear and small family groups, there will be, they would want to be able to consider being reunited with family members. For example, you may have family members that have been separated, where you have some in the camps that, you know, are being, the camps being accessed, you know, to bring families over, and there may be other family members that would have come through Europe. So, for example, the Red Cross, that is a piece of work that we do, our international family tracing service in trying to restore family links. So there are those as well to consider when you're accessing accommodation and resources, because it may be that a family of five arrives and maybe there could be additional members that may need to join later on. But key for, you know, our communities is about how do we support these people to integrate, to become part of the community on a long into the longer term. So we have to work with various agencies, but at the end of the day, empowering and enabling these people, because I think I've mentioned about pioneers, but also the human being, you want to be able to maintain your dignity. And being able to maintain your dignity, an element of that is that you get your independence. If you are in a position where it feels like I need a bit of support at this point in time, that support should come with enabling and empowering people to get to that point where they get their independence. So to be able to get there, obviously there are stages. And at the moment, we're all mostly at the pre-arrival stage in Thames Valley. And for those local authorities, the Red Cross is involved with. I think apart from the two district councils, I think Charwell and West Oxfordshire and Oxford City, three of them, whom have actually brought families in, all the other local authorities across Thames Valley are looking to start receiving families from about May. We are involved with Reading at the moment. We also will be working with the local authority in Milton Keynes. And for Henley, which is, I believe this is South Oxfordshire. Yes, I got it right. Because I've had to learn some of my geography along the way. For South Oxfordshire and the Vale of Whitehorse, they're approaching this as one southern vale. And there had to be a process that we put in an offer of how we can support them, and they would make a decision. And I would say right now that we're waiting to know whether the Red Cross would be in a position to work with the local authority in Southern Vale. So it could be another organization, but at the end of the day, the approach has been a collaborative approach, because even where we are not working, we're not the lead agency, we've been able to support. Because I think, again, the Red Cross, we have various services that people can benefit from. For example, in Oxford, we've been able to go in and use our basic first aid, you know, to give these people some life skills, or, basic first aid skills, emergency skills around the home. We've been able to give information about our family, restoring family link service, and that is how we've been approaching it right across. And for us to be able to do that, we've within those local authorities where they're already delivering on this program, on this project, we've had to engage the community, we've had to engage with other voluntary organizations, we've had to engage with civil society, and I think that is the only way we can go to get these people to become fully part of the community. So very quickly moving on, to just give you an idea of our services, I'll skip this and go to just a map of Thames Valley. and where we operate from. So we have the main services, our refugee support service and our family tracing service. For our refugee support service and a lot of the people we come across, asylum seekers, refugees, there's a lot of destitution. And we work with them to try to get some destitution relief. Some of that involves advice, information, or referring them, getting them registered with GPs, doing a lot of advocacy. Because a key issue here wherein we're having to do a lot of advocacy is about people not where there is a sense that sometimes asylum seekers, while they're going through the process, they do not understand the system and they need that support to be able to go through the system. You gain your refugee status, but there is still the challenge to engage agencies. So we have to advocate on their behalf for the rights to be able to access their rights and entitlements. In blue, where I've put the orientation, integration, and well-being support, that comes with when people would have gained refugee status and need to settle within the community. And it's the activities that we engage in or working with like civil society to get them to then finally settle into their community. And the resettlement program mainly is based on those three. Getting them oriented initially, very intense program in the first 2 to 3 weeks, and then beginning to identify agencies that can support them with English classes, if there are health issues, accessing mental health services, getting the kids into school. And at some point later on, trying to access well-being packages. So it could be projects within the community. For example, in Milton Keynes, we have what we call a Stepping Stones Allotment Project. And it's for people to come in and work as a group. We have a group of volunteers, work as a group and grow things. And they benefit from that. And also, you know, we organize activities from time to time where the rest of the Milton Keynes community would come together and be with them and share from the proceeds. Our family tracing service, I've mentioned restoring family links. Again, we can we are able to utilize those services when they're ready for them. And if I can just mention with the restoring family links, a really unique element to this that has been put in place as a result of the migration across Europe. You know, the people becoming separated during that really traumatic and treacherous journey sometimes is what we call Trace the Face. So there is a database that has been compiled wherever, you know, people get to in Europe. They take their photographs and their details and they're on a database, but it's obviously for confidentiality and protection reasons. People have to go through the Red Cross to be able to access and search for their families. So there is that really unique opportunity, an element that's been added onto our family tracing service. And at some point, employment, volunteering opportunities, where we would get people to begin to do something for themselves. I just thought I'll share with you and give you an idea of the sort of numbers we're working with across Thames Valley. In 2015, just under 600 people we worked with. This includes dependents as well, so children, lots of actions. But for Oxfordshire itself, about 25% of our work across Oxfordshire. And if I can just say, a lot of our work we do in collaboration or in support of other community organizations. Our main direct access work is in Milton Keynes, and now it's growing in Reading and in High Wycombe. The work that we would probably engage with in you know, as a result of this refugee resettlement program in Oxfordshire would be what I've mentioned in Southwick through Southern Vale. But that is, again, dependent on whether they choose to work with us. But whether we're the lead agency or not at all, we will collaborate with whoever, you know, because at the end of the day, that's what the Red Cross does, you know, working to support people. So that is just a flavor of what the Red Cross does here in the Thames Valley. And I just felt, I think just like with Dr. Mamlatis, what can we do to help? Very quickly, at the moment, where we've engaged a group in Abingdon. They're calling themselves the Host Abingdon. And again, this is the individuals in the community coming together to say, how can we support? How can we work with the local authority? How can we work with agencies like yourself? So they're already thinking, we can set up ESOL classes. We can set up support groups for men and women and the young people. We can work with the schools. And other element, you know, that people can work with us on is we have a very good youth education. We have very good youth education resources. And our colleagues nationally would be able to go train teachers in schools or even within the community. If the community, you know, people come together in the community and decide we want to be able to work with schools, because at the end of the day, you have children who are going to go into schools, and I think we owe it to the host community to have an understanding of where these people are coming from and how they can prepare themselves to welcome them into their schools, both the teachers and the young people and parents generally. So there is that element of it that we can work with. But I think in my various conversations with Romy, I've mentioned about like the Citizen MK group. There is City of Sanctuary in Reading, Oxford as well, there is a City of Sanctuary, and these are all grassroots movement made up of people, you know, from the community coming together and want to act on issues. So I will leave with you, and as I believe Romy said, at the end of your series of talks, just trying to find out how the community here can, or what they can do. Be it supporting, you know, programs like Dr. Mamlats or other charities working in Syria, or whether, you know, how you can support what's coming, you know, to our doorstep here in Oxfordshire. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sanaf. As you can see this evening, we have a huge range of possibilities. Can you hear with this? Can you hear with this all okay? Huge range of difficult images that we're facing from the film.